Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Moonsinger by Andre Norton. Narrated by Chris Abernathy and Chelsea Stevens. Moon of Three Rings. Chapter 1. What is space? Is it a wilderness beyond any man's exploring, even if he had 100, 1,000 lifespans in which to prowl the lanes between solar systems and planets, to go questing, to seek ever new and newer knowledge of what may lie beyond the next sun, the next system? Yet to such seekers comes also the knowledge that there must be no boundaries to man's belief, but rather an acceptance of wonders which would leave the planet-bound, those who follow familiar trails, incredulous and refusing to accept the evidence of their own senses. Those who do venture ever into the unknown, the first-in scouts of survey, the explorers, and not the least, the free traders who pluck a living from the fringes of the galaxy, to these it is a commonplace thing to discover that the legends and fantasies of one planet may be lightsome or grim truth on another world. For each new planetfall brings its own mysteries and discoveries. Which is perhaps too much of a pseudo-philosophic beginning for this account, save I know of no better, not being used to making more than trade reports for that repository of some very strange facts, the League of Free Traders. When a man tries to deal with the unbelievable, he finds it a fumbling business, in need of some introduction. First-in scouts, from their unending quest for new worlds and systems, turn in many weird and strange reports to survey. But even the planets opened to human contact by their efforts can yield hidden secrets after they have been pronounced favorable ports for wandering ships or even for pioneer settlements. The free traders who exist upon cross-trade, having no fat plums to sustain them as do the combines of the inner planets with their monopolies, face now and again things that even survey does not know. Thus it was on Yictor, in the time of the Moon of Three Rings. And who better can make this report than I, to whom this happened, though I was only assistant cargo master of the Lydus, the last signed member of her crew into the bargain. Over the years, the free traders, because of their way of life, have become almost a separate race in the galaxy. They own no one-world home, nor do some ships possess a home port, but wander always. So it is that among us the ship itself is our only planet, and we look upon all without its shell as alien. Although not in this sense are we xenophobic, for it is part of our nature that we have a strong bent toward exploration and acceptance of the outer. Now we are born to the trade, for families live within the larger ships, it being decided long since that such was better for us than casual and transitory connections in ports, which might lead to a man's losing his ship. The big space-borne ports are small cities in themselves, each operating as a central mart for a sector where large deals are carried out, where those who have a mate and children may enjoy a kind of home life between voyages. But the Lydus was a bachelor ship of the D-class, intended for risky rim trading where only men without ties would venture. And I, Krip Vorland, was well content to so set my feet on the ladder of trade, for my father had not returned from his last voyage years back, and my mother, after the custom of the traders, had married again within 2 years and followed her new mate elsewhere. So I had no one to speak up for me at the time of assignment. Our captain was Urban Foss, well regarded as a coming man, though young and sometimes thought to be a shade reckless. But that suited his crew, who were willing to have a leader who might by some gamble advance them well into the ranks of those who had solid credit at the trade center. Juhel Liege was the cargo master, and my only quarrel with him, though he was no light taskmaster, was that he guarded some of his trade secrets jealously, leaving me to ferret hints for myself. But perhaps that was the best way of training, putting me ever on the alert when I was on duty, and giving me opportunity to think much when I was not being official. We had made two good voyages before we landed on Yictor, and undoubtedly we felt that we were perhaps better than we were. However, caution is never forgotten on a free trader. After we planeted, before we opened hatches, Foss had us all in to listen to the guide tape carrying all the warnings for this world. The only port, such as it was, for this was truly a frontier world, lay outside Yirjar, a city as far as Yictor knew cities, in the middle of a large northern landmass. We had timed our arrival carefully for the Great Trade Fair, a meeting of merchants and populace from all over the entire planet, held at 2 planet-years intervals at the end of the fall harvest season. Like fairs on many other worlds, this gathering had once had, and still possessed as a pallid shadow, religious significance, being the supposed date when an ancient folk hero had met and vanquished some demoniacal enemy to save his people, died as a result of his exertions, and thereafter been entombed with pomp. The people still enacted a kind of play of this feat, followed by games in which the lords vied with one another, each backing his personal champions. The winners of each contest carried off enough awards and prestige, not for himself alone, but also for his patron, to last until the next fair. Chapter 2. The government of Yictor was at the feudal stage. Several times in its history, kings and conquerors had risen to unite whole continents under their sway for perhaps their lifetimes. This unification sometimes extended into the following generation, or maybe two, but eventually fell apart through quarrels of the nobles. The pattern had held constant with no advancement. The priests, though, had vague traditions that there had been an earlier civilization which had risen to a position of greater stability and technical knowledge. No one knew the reason for the stagnation at this step of civilization, and no native appeared to care or to believe there could be another way of life. We had arrived during one of the periods of chaos wherein half a dozen lords snapped and snarled at one another, but none had backing, audacity, luck, or whatever was demanded of a leader to take over. Thus, the existing balance of power was a delicate thing. This meant for us traitors brain lock, weapon lock, nuisances though they were, and much as we disliked them. Far back in free trading, for their own protection against the power of the patrol and the wrath of control, the traders themselves had realized the necessity of these two safeguards on primitive planets. Certain technical information was not an item to be traded, no matter how high the inducement. Arms from off-world, or the knowledge of their manufacture, were set behind a barrier of no sale. When we planeted on such a world, all weapons other than belt stunners were put into a lock stas, which would not be released until the ship rose from that earth. We also passed a brain lock inhibiting any such information being won from us. This might seem to make us unarmed prey for any ambitious lord who might wish to wring us hard for such facts, but the law of the fair gave us complete immunity from danger, as long as we stayed within the limits set by the priests on the first day. For following almost universal galactic custom, one which appeared to be spontaneous and native to every world where such gatherings had existed for ages, the fairground was both neutral territory and sanctuary. Deadly enemies could meet there, and neither dared put hand to weapon. A crime could be committed elsewhere, and if the criminal reached the fair and was law-abiding therein, he was safe from pursuit or punishment as long as the fair continued. The gathering had its own laws and police, and any crime committed within was given speedy punishment. So that this meeting place was also a site for the cautious sounding out between lords for the settlement of feuds, and perhaps the making of new alliances. The penalty for any man breaking the peace of the fair was outlawry, the same as a sentence of death, but perhaps, in its way, more torturous and lingering for the criminal. This much we all knew, though we sat in patience as the guide tape told it over again. For on a trader, One does not ever push aside any briefing as unnecessary or time-wasting. Then Foss launched once more into the apportioning of planet-side duties. These varied in rotation among us from world to world. There was always a guard for the ship, but the rest of us could explore in pairs in our free time. From the morning gong until mid-afternoon, we would man our own booth for meeting with native merchants. Foss had visited Yiktor once before, as second-in-command of the Coal Sack, before he had his own ship, and now drew upon his notes to refresh his memory. As is true on all free traders, though the cargo master handles the main cargo and the business of the ship at large, each member of the crew is expected to develop some special interest or specialty, to keep his eyes open, and to suggest new products which might add to the general prosperity of the voyage. Thus, we were encouraged to explore all such marts in pairs, and to take an interest in local produce, sniffing out a need of the natives which we might in the future supply, or picking up some hitherto overlooked export. The main cargo from Yirjar was Liege's concern. It was sprode, a thick juice pressed from certain leaves, then hardened into blocks which could be easily stored in our lowest hold after we had emptied it of bales of Murano, a shimmering thick silk which the Yiktor native weavers seized upon avidly. They patiently unraveled its threads to combine with their finest material, thus making a length go twice as far. Sometimes a lord would pay a full season's land tribute for a cloak length of unadulterated fabric. The sprode blocks, transferred at section base to another ship, would end up halfway across the galaxy, where they were made into a wine which the Zakathans declared heightened their mental powers and cured several diseases of that ancient lizard race. Though I can't imagine why a Zakathan needed his mental powers heightened, they already had quite a start on mankind in that direction. But the sprode would not provide a full cargo, and it was up to us to discover odds and ends to fill in. Guesses did not always pay off. There were times when what seemed a treasure turned out to be a worthless burden, eventually to be space-dumped. But gambles had done so well in the past that we were certain they would pay off again for all of us. Any trader with a lucky choice behind him had a better chance for advancement, with hopes for not too long a time before he could ask for an owner's contract and a higher share in a venture. It meant keeping your eyes open, having a good memory for things recorded on past voyage tapes, and probably having something which our elders called flair, and which was a natural gift and nothing learned by study, no matter how doggedly pursued. Of course, there were always the easy, spectacular things, a new fabric, a gemstone, eye-catchers, but these were usually right out in the open, and the fair steerer made very sure that the cargo master saw them at the first sighting when the big merchants met. On such sales as these depended perhaps all a planet's lure for off-world traders, and they were publicly hawked. The others were hiders, things you nosed out on spec, almost always an obscure product some native merchant had brought to the booths on spec himself, small items which could be made into luxury trade for off-world, light, easy to transport, to sell for perhaps 1,000 times cost price to the dilettanti of the crowded inner planets, who were always in search of something new with which to impress their neighbors. Foss had had a storied success on his second voyage with the Ispan carpets, masterpieces of weaving and color which could be folded into a package no longer than a man's arm, yet shaken out in silken splendor to cover a great room floor, wearing well, with a flow of shade into shade which delighted and soothed the eyes. My immediate superior, Liege, was responsible for the Crantex Dallo discovery. So it was that a very insignificant-appearing, shriveled black fruit had now become an industry which made the League a goodly number of credits, put Liege on secondary contract, and benefited a quarter of a struggling pioneer planet. One could not hope for such breaks at the start, of course, though I think that deep down inside all of us apprentices did, but there were smaller triumphs to bring a commendation for one's E-record. I went with Leege and the captain to the end meeting on first day. It was held in the Great Booth, which was really a hall of no mean dimensions on a field beyond the walls of Yirjar, now the center of the fair. While most Yuktorian architecture tended toward the gloom and dark of buildings which must always be ready to serve as fortifications in time of siege, the Great Booth, being free of such danger, was somewhat less grim. Its walls were of stone, but only part way. Inside, there was an open space almost the entire width, broken only by pillars which supported a sharply peaked roof, the eaves of which extended far out from the walls to afford good weather protection, though it was the dry season in which the fair was held, and usually fine weather. The light thus given to the interior was far more than you could find in any building elsewhere on Yuktor. We were the only free trader in port, though there was a licensed ship under Combine registry, carrying, by contract only, specified cargo which we did not dispute. This was one time when there was truce between off-worlders, and no need for sharp maneuvering, our captains and cargo masters sharing the high seats of the senior merchants in amicability. The rest of us lesser fry were not so comfortably housed. We rated on a level with our second guildsman, and by rights would have had to stand in the outer aisles, save that we each bore, with a great deal of show, counting boards. These served the double duty of getting us inside with our officers and impressing the native population that off-worlders were rather stupid and needed such aids for reckoning. Always a beginning move in shrewd bargaining. We therefore squatted at the foot of the high seat platform and took ostentatious notes of all the exhibits displayed and praised in the offering. There were some furs from the north, a deep, rich red with a ripple of golden light crossing them as they were turned in the hands of the merchant showing them. Fabrics were brought out by the bolt and draped over small racks put up by subordinates. There was a great deal of metal work, mostly in the form of weapons. Swords and spears appear to be a universal primitive armament in the galaxy, and these were undoubtedly forged by masters who knew their art. There was chain-link armor for the body, helmets, some of them crested with miniature beasts or feathered birds, and shields. And then a last merchant came up with the air of one about to top the show of war materials. Two of his guildsmen exhibited shooting at a mark with a new type of crossbow, which, from the stir his demonstration provoked, must have been a vast improvement over the usual. The arms display, which was a very large item in the local market, was more or less of a bore for us. Of course, now and then one picked up a sword or dagger to sell to some collector, but that was the smallest of private ventures. It was a long session. The Yuktorians broke at once for refreshments, passing around tankards of their bitter and, to us, undrinkable ale, and a hasty meal made of a fruit and meat paste between flat grain cakes. But it was near to sunset before we were dismissed. By custom, Captain Foss and Leege were to go to the official banquet given by the fair authorities, but we second men would return to our ships. The junior representative of the Combine Duffeldan, who had been sharing the same uncomfortable board seat with me at the platform foot, stretched and grinned after he slammed his noteboard between his middle and his belt for safekeeping. "Well, that's safely over," he said, stating the obvious. "You free to port crawl?" Usually free traders and combine men do not mix. There was too much trouble in the past history we share, though nowadays things are better policed than they used to be. The League has a weighty hand, and the Combine leaders no longer try to elbow out a trader who can call upon such support. In the old days, a one-ship trader had no hope of fighting back, but the feelings and memories stemming from those times still kept us apart, so I was no more cordial than mere civility when I answered, "Not yet. Not until after report." "Same here." If my coolness meant anything, he did not show it. Instead, he waited for me to stow away my own board, which I did slowly to give him a chance to go, though he did not take it. "I am Gaux Lafede."
"Crib Vorland."
Reluctantly, I matched step with him. The exit was crowded by native merchants and guildsmen, and, as is wise for off-worlders, we did not push in among them. I saw him glance at my collar badge, and I returned that check. He was in cargo, but his disc was modified by 2 bars, while mine bore only 1. But then promotion in the combine, while leading perhaps to greater wealth in the end, came more slowly. One can never judge the planet age of those who spend most of their lives in space. Some of us cannot even tell the number of our years by that method. But I thought this Gaux Lafede might be somewhat older than I.
"Done your spec looking yet?"
That was a question I would have thought too brash for even a combine man, arrogant as they were inclined to be. Yet when I stared at him, I believed he did not honestly realize that that was one of the questions one did not ask, save of a kinsman or blood comrade. Perhaps he had heard of free trader customs and was drawing on faulty knowledge to make conversation. "We are not yet port free." No use taking offense if his question was an innocent one, though in bad form. One learns to put aside offense when dealing with aliens, and the Combine in the past had been more alien to those of my calling than many non-human contacts. Perhaps he read something of my feeling, for he did not pursue that line, but as we came to a thronged side street, he motioned at its gaudy flags and banners, each bearing the squiggles of local sign writing, and proclaiming a number of amusements, both innocent and bordering on the vicious. For, as the fair gathered sellers and buyers, priests and respectable people, so was it the focus for those who earned their livelihood by offering excitement for the mind and senses.
"There's plenty to see here, or are you shipbound at night?"
Was there or was there not a faint trace of patronage in that? I decided it was best not to explore beyond surface emotions. We were not engaged in any sale, and I was cautious.
"So I have heard, but I have not yet drawn my watch button."
He grinned again, raising his hand to his forehead in a gesture approximating a salute.
"Fortune attend you then, Vorland. We have already drawn, and I have my night free. If you make it, look me up."
Again he gestured, this time indicating a banner near the end of the line. It was not bright in color like those the wind tugged at around it, being an odd shade of gray, yet also shot with rose. Still, once you looked at it, your eyes kept returning, undeterred by the more garish lures surrounding it.
"That is something special," Slafede continued, "if you like beast shows."
A beast show? For the second time I was disconcerted. My mental picture of a combine man suggested a far different taste in amusement, something closer to the sophisticated, almost decadent pleasures of the inner planets. Then suspicion moved in on me. I wondered if this Gaux Lafede was Esper, for he had unerringly picked out the one entertainment which would draw me first, did I know of it. I allowed one of my mind-seek tendrils to uncurl, not actually to invade, naturally, that was the last thing I must do, but to seek delicately for any Esper aura. There was none, and I was left a little chagrined at my suspicion.
"If I am fortunate," I answered him, "I will indeed follow your advice."
He was hailed then by a crewman wearing the insignia of his ship, and gave me that half-salute once more before he joined his friend. But I stood for a moment or two watching that almost demurely colored banner, trying to figure out why it drew the eye so steadily. Things such as that are important for traders to learn. Was it only me that it could so influence, or was it the same for others? Somehow to know the answer became so important that I was determined to bring someone, the most cool-headed crewmate I could find, to test it. I was lucky to come away from the drawing with port leave for that night.
the Lydus had so small a crew that only four of us were free, and it can be difficult for four pledged to go in pairs if they have very diversified ideas of amusement. Because of our junior status, I went out with Gris Sharvin, the second engineer. Well, I had wanted a hard-headed companion to try my banner on, and in Gris, fate had given me one. He is a born traitor, generations bred as all of us. But his first love is the ship, and I do not believe that he ever, except when it was expected of him, searched for any trade. Luckily, I remembered that the deep crimson banner of a swordsmith's display fencer flapped not too far from the beast show, and used that as a lure for Gris. Among our own kind, Gris is a gambler, but that is another activity against which we are inhibited in an alien port. It can lead, as drinking, drugging, and eyeing the daughters of strangers, to trouble which would endanger the ship. Thus the desires for such amusements are blocked for us temporarily, and in our sober moments we agree that is wisdom. At the end of the show street, now brilliant with lanterns, each as brightly colored as the banners above, each patterned with pictures through which light shone to advertise the fairs within, I pointed out that of the fencer. The pink-gray flag was still there, but the lantern below it was a silver globe with no pattern breaking its pearl luster. Gris pointed to it. "What's that?" "I was told a beast show," I replied. Living as we do, mostly in space, free traders might be expected to have little contact or interest in animals. Long ago, all ships carried felines for the protection of the cargo, since they hunted to rout out any pests stowing away. For centuries, they were inseparable crew members, but their numbers grew less and less. They did not have as large or as many litters anymore. We had forgotten where that animal had originated, so fresh stock could not be obtained to renew the breed. There were still a few at headquarters, highly prized, protected, tended, in hope that the breed might be reinstated, and we had all tried from time to time to replace them with various hunters from many worlds. One or two breeds had promise, but the majority could not adapt to ship life. Perhaps this desire for companion animals gives us a strong pull toward alien beasts. I did not know about Gris, but I knew that I must visit the booth behind the moon globe, and it seemed that I would have no argument, for he came willingly with me. From somewhere there was a dull, heavy gong note. The chatter, the laughter, the singing died down a little, the crowd paying tribute to a temple call. But the hush did not last, for while the fair had its religious side, that had faded with the passing of centuries. We came under the shadow of the pink-gray banner into the halo of the moon lamp. I had expected some pictures of the animals to be strung up to entice an audience, but instead there was only a fabric screen bearing tangles of native scripts, and over the door flap a strange mask emblem, neither beast nor bird, but combining the two. Gris gave a small exclamation as he looked up at that. "What is it?" His eager expression surprised me a little. I had seen such a look before, only when he fronted a new and intricate machine. "This is a real find." "Find?" I thought of some piece of trade luck. "A real sight," he corrected himself as if he knew my thought. "This is a Thassa show." Like Captain Foss, he had visited Yuktor before. But I could only repeat, "Thassa?" I believed I had studied the Yuktor tapes with close attention, but the meaning of this eluded me. "Come!" Gris pulled me along to where a slender native in a silvery tunic and high red boots was accepting scale pieces for admittance. The native looked up, and I was startled. Around us was the crowd of Yuktorians born and bred, human as to form, with only slight differences between them and my own species. But this youth in his pale clothing seemed more alien to the world than we. He had an appearance of fragility, almost as if the wind tugging at the sign banner over us could lap around him and carry him off. His skin.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?